There are only 15 museums across America with a dual designation as both a museum and a zoo. One is in Bend, Oregon. Joining the exchange to tell us more is John Nelson, the wildlife curator at the High Desert Museum in Bend. Welcome to the exchange, John.
Hi, Mike. Nice to be here.
Well, let's start with a general overview of the High Desert Museum. What is it? Where is it? And why does it exist?
Yeah, so the High Desert Museum, we're a small museum in Bend, Oregon. We've been here for over 40 years now, and we're a multidisciplinary facility. So when you come to the museum, you're going to see all different kinds of things, including, you know, historical information, artwork, and live animals.
Okay, and why was it created?
It was created, our founder was Don Kerr, and he founded the museum back in the 80s, and he was just really passionate about the High Desert region, and he wanted to create a place where people could kind of gain a connection to the region and learn about its history and explore, you know, ways that we can all share the landscape and promote the conservation of the this place, you know, into the future.
So give me a sense of how big the museum is. What's the size?
So the museum, we sit on about 135 acres, but the functional space that we use is only about 10 acres of that. So there's a number of buildings that you can go through. The main building is where we have a number of our rotating exhibits and static exhibit wings. And then you can walk out on the grounds. We have a North American River Otter exhibit and the Don Kerr Bird of Prey Center, where we keep all of our raptors.
You keep raptors? When I think of raptors, I think of dinosaurs. You're not talking dinosaurs.
No, we're talking about birds of prey.
Gotcha. So how many people visit the museum on average each year?
Visitation's been growing in recent years. I think we're up to around 200,000 visitors a year.
Wow. So talk to me about the museum's dual designation as both a museum and a zoo. What's the benefit of a dual designation?
The benefit of the accreditations is just to show that we're maintaining the highest possible standard in our field of work. And so we're accredited by AAM, the American Alliance Museums, that covers all of the museum aspects of the work we do, including the care of the, you know, thousands of objects that we have in the vault and the exhibits. And then our more recent accreditation is through AZA, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, and that is just a third-party accreditation body coming in and looking at the way that we care for the live animals that we keep here and showing that we're maintaining the highest possible standard in their care.
So what's the criteria to get that designation, and how long did it take?
It took us a few years to get ready to apply for accreditation. I'd say we've been working on it extensively for at least a good 4 years now. There's accreditation standards that AZA puts out, and they get revised and updated pretty regularly just about every year. But those accreditation standards cover all aspects of the operation of the facility, from your finances to your education and conservation programs. And then they dive really deep, obviously, into the care of the animals. And so there's a large number of different policies and protocols that you have to have in place, and good records keeping, and just a number of things that they kind of go through with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that you have everything in order.
Does that new designation qualify you as a zoo?
I don't think that we consider ourselves a zoo here at the High Desert Museum, although we do keep live animals. But because we do keep live animals, I think in many ways we are, at least with the animal care aspect of the work we do, we're very similar to a zoo, and we want to maintain those really high standards of the well-being of the animals that we keep here.
Does that open up new opportunities, for revenue streams or for funding?
Yeah, I think potentially there could be some grant potential through AZA that we wouldn't have previously had access to. I think the more valuable part of that is, though, the AZA community, which has been wonderful, not only now that we're accredited, but in the years leading up to accreditation. It's a very transparent, very open group of facilities that are very willing to share, and they all just want what's best for the animals at all of the facilities. So there's a huge network now of professionals that we can reach out to and work with to make sure that we're taking the best possible care of the animals that we have here.
My guest is John Nelson. He's a wildlife curator at the High Desert Museum in Bend, Oregon. So, John, tell me about your work. Give me day-to-day. What does that look like?
I don't have a typical day. We're a small facility. There's seven people on my team, including myself. And so I get my fingers into a little bit of everything. A lot of my work these days is administrative, so dealing with all of the policies and protocols we have in place and making sure that our paperwork is done and that our records are complete and that we have all the necessary permits that we need to do the work that we do. Although I also work with my team on the training and the husbandry of the animals, and I coordinate veterinary care for all of these animals.
Well, let's talk about how many animals you have, or what types of animals, and what does your team do on a day-to-day?
Yeah, so we have, it's hard to put a number on it because we do have a lot of small fish and things, but excluding the ponds and some of the aquariums that have large groups of fish, there's about 100 animals that we care for here. Most of those are going to be reptiles and amphibians, so relatively small animals like western fence lizards. And more recently, we've got Mazama newts from Crater Lake that are on exhibit here. But there's also about 11 to 12 mammals, including bobcat, striped skunk, North American river otter, North American porcupine. And then we have about 30 birds, which are primarily native birds of prey, so eagles, hawks, owls, falcons, and vultures. My team is divided into different kind of specialties, and so there's people who take care of the different kinds of animals, and each of them has their own specialty, and their whole day is comprised of taking care of those animals. And so they all have about 10 to 11 animals that they're responsible for, and they're preparing the diets, they're making sure that the animals get fed, they're administering any medications that have been prescribed by the vet, they're doing all of the cleaning to keep those exhibits and enclosures really clean. They're training their animals, and they're delivering programs to the public.
So how do you determine which animals to acquire and care for?
Yeah, so we do have a collections plan that helps guide us, and we're strongly focused on native species within the ecoregion that we interpret, which is basically the Intermountain West of the United States. So we're focused primarily on native species. We do work really hard, though, to bring animals in that don't really have any other options. So we're a lot of the animals here are rescues, so to speak. So many of them have come from wildlife rehab. They've sustained an injury or they have a behavioral issue that makes them unable to survive in the wild. So we'll work with rehabbers not only in Oregon, but really almost throughout the country. And when an animal comes up that fits into our collection plan that you know, for whatever reason, can't go back into the wild, we'll evaluate that animal to see if it would be a good fit either for exhibits or programs here at the museum, and then we'll bring them here just as a way to kind of give them a second chance at life, you know, give them a good place where they're going to have a really high level of care for the rest of their life.
When you talk about high level of care, do you have vets on staff?
We don't have a vet on staff. We're a relatively small facility, but we have a vet, a contract veterinarian who's on call 24/7, and he conducts on-site rounds at least every 2 weeks. So he's coming in, looking at all the animals, doing, you know, physical health assessments, diagnosing any illness or injury that occurs, and then treating whatever comes up.
Well, how do the people on your team get to be on your team? Talk about the education and training path that leads to the work that you do.
For sure. Yeah, so my team, they all have kind of a different background. Most of them are going to have a bachelor's degree or even a master's degree, usually in biology, zoology, wildlife management, something along those lines. And so I've got a couple people on the team that have come to us from other zoos, some who have come from all the way across the country. And then I have other folks on my team who started here as an intern, like a college intern, looking to get a natural resources or a wildlife or a zoology degree. And they kind of started with the internship and then were able to work their way up into a full-time position.
So how do you ensure the safety of visitors as they come through? You said there are 200,000 on average every year?
Yeah, so we have extensive safety policies, and I don't necessarily manage that, but I am responsible for making sure that our animals are safe from the visitors and vice versa. So we do some programs like free flight programs where we have birds that are flying free over the audience, and we have various kinds of rules to make sure that everybody stays safe, not just the people, but also the animals.
When you talk about birds flying free over the audience, how do you train birds to do that?
Yeah, so that's one of the things that we're most proud of is our summertime free flight program called Raptors of the Desert Sky. And it's a ticketed program. There's a little bit of a charge for it, but we will take visitors out to a kind of a clearing on the north end of our property. So up to 200 people sitting in a kind of a natural amphitheater where you can't see any of the buildings of the museum. And the idea is that it feels like you're out in the forest. And then we'll have usually at least five birds that will come out in turn and fly back and forth over the audience's head while an interpreter talks about the natural history and the conservation of those species in turn. I've got two people that work extensively, almost primarily, with training those birds to do that. And so we use falconry techniques for the most part, but we're also looking for the latest and greatest information coming out of the zoo community for how to train these animals using operant conditioning and positive reinforcement. So all of the participation from the animals is choice-based. The animals get to opt into whether or not they want to do the program each day. And if they don't want to do it, then they don't have to. And the way that we gauge that is by training them to go in and out of a kennel carrier, like a box. Mm-hmm. And once they're trained to go into that box, we use that as a way to see. We'll go into their enclosure, open to the door of the box. If they get in, we take that as a cue that they want to participate. If they don't, then they don't have to. But that also means that in order to fly five birds every day and to do that consistently 7 days a week, I have to have 10 birds that are willing to do it, because on any given day, one of them might not want to go.
And how many birds do you have?
We have approximately 30 that we care for here at the museum. 11 of those are on static exhibits. When you come to the museum and you walk through, you'll see these animals living in their habitats. The rest of them are behind the scenes, and they're used for the various programming that we do.
Okay, so do your animals procreate?
We don't do any breeding here at this point in time. That's something we might do in the future for species where there's a conservation need, but it's not something we do currently.
Well, animals have life cycles, so how do you replenish them?
Yeah, so as like I said previously, we're getting rescues and orphans and rehab animals primarily. AZA accreditation will open up some other sources of animals for us, because within AZA, animals come available that we wouldn't have had access to in the past, but we can now get them from other zoos. But most of our animals are coming, they're being placed here by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, or they're being made available by wildlife rehabbers, and they're animals that can't go back into the wild, and so they need a good home.
What's your intake process like?
The intake process, it varies a little bit depending on where the animal's coming from, but basically a rehabber will reach out to me and say, hey, I have a peregrine falcon that has, you know, these kinds of health problems. Are you interested in it? And if it's something that we're interested in, then we will pay for them to have a veterinarian kind of look at that animal, determine exactly why it's non-releasable, find any other health problems or ailments that it might have. And then once our vet has signed off on that, then we'll go ahead and move the animal. We have to apply for a permit, and the permits vary by the type of animal that it is. So in the example of a peregrine falcon, that would be a federal education permit through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We'd have to wait for that approval to go through, and then we have to get an import permit from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and then we would go ahead and move the animal. If the animal's coming from a long ways, we might actually put it on an airplane, believe it or not, and it'll fly into the airport. Once they get here, we quarantine them. So they're going to go into a quarantine facility that we have on site where a veterinarian is going to monitor just to make sure that they don't have any illnesses or anything that's going to be transferred to the other animals at the facility. And then after the quarantine period is over, we immediately put them into their full-time enclosure and we start working on training.
Well, it sounds like a complex operation. What's the cost of managing a zoo and a museum?
Oh, it's expensive. I don't know off the top of my head, but, you know, caring for the animals alone carries a pretty heavy price tag. And that's one of the reasons why we have programs like Raptors of the Desert Sky. And there's a little bit of an additional charge of that and it helps us cover some of those costs.
So are there separate budgets for the museum side and the zoo side?
They're kind of wrapped up together in many ways. So like our facilities department, who helps with the animal stuff, they have their own budget, but they're doing museum and animal stuff. But for me on my team to manage the animals and my staff, I have my own budget.
Okay. So very quickly, I've got to run, but how can people learn more about the High Desert Museum?
Yeah, you can visit our website, and anytime you're in Bend, you can stop by and take a look.
Okay, well, that's all the time we have. Thank you, John.
Yeah, you're very welcome.